This is sex. Everyone gets what they want. This is sexploration.
Explore.
Play.
This is Sexploration with Monica.
Sex is proof that God loves us and wants us to have fun.
Sexploration with Monica on FCCFreeRadio.com.
Tonight on Sexploration with Monica, we'll be talking about sexual economics. Could sexuality be an economy? When we're afraid, like when everyone's freaking out, the market goes down. When everyone feels optimistic, the market goes up. It's all about perception, scarcity, and abundance. And how could this fit into our sex life? For instance, with monogamy. So to that end, we have a woman who's had certainly an abundance of sex parties in her life over the last 10 years. She started Kinky Salon with her partner Scott over 10 years ago, and she's writing a book about the trajectory of Kinky Salon and all the different events that it's spawned. Pink and Velvet. There's events for BDSM, Threshold, and Sacred Sexuality is Essence. So many different things going on at Mission Control. Polly, welcome to Sexploration with Monica.
Hi, Monica.
Yeah, so you started a latex fashion school, and you are doing Beauty Engine, which is all about social engineering for the future, and all sorts of different things, sex-positive community events. It's almost difficult to introduce you because there's so many things that I want to tell people about that you do.
Oh, well, that's lovely. Thank you, Monica. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like you say, I've been a community leader, kind of sex-positive spokesperson, polyamory kind of a cheerleader for at least a decade at this point.
And she's known as Polly Glamorous, Polly Whitaker, Polly Pandemonium. Lots of different names.
And Polly Superstar. Don't forget
Polly Superstar. Yes. PollySuperstar.com is her blog, actually. Very interesting stuff. Some stuff about scarcity and sexual economics.
Yeah. Basically, I've been throwing these parties for as long as I have. And I started to get kind of bored after many years of every weekend watching people, you know, get laid all the time. It just got kind of like, okay.
It's so nice that you could get bored of that. Like, wow, that's kind of neat.
And my brain started wandering. And
like, what can I think about now?
The direction that it wandered, randomly enough, was into economics. I know, that's really weird, right? It's a stretch.
Right.
But
like, it kind of boomerangs back into the business world? What?
No,
how does that work?
Not so much that, more just about, economics is just about exchange. It's about how we exchange things. And whether that's resources or whether it's, sexual favors or relationships or love, it's all about exchanging things and how
and
people
right.
exchange. And when I started to get really interested in, particularly in alternative economics, complementary currencies and things like that, I started to realize that there was actually a lot of parallels between the way that people behave when it comes to exchanging money mm-hmm. and the way people behave when it comes to relationships. In our culture, people are, they're gripped by this fear of scarcity.
Mm-hmm.
And it really...
Being alone. Or not having enough money.
Basically, the same thing in either count. Being the one who's left outside in the cold, all alone.
Mm-hmm.
Both are the same thing, whether you're talking about in relationships or you're talking about having the finances to be able to build your house to live in with your family. Like, you are going to be the one who's left out, because ultimately, you know, we're told that it's a fact that there isn't enough to go around.
Right.
That we live in a place where if you find this, you better hold on tight.
Right. If you find a relationship or if you find money, you really have to just...
You got to hold on tight to this. There's my favorite economist, because I have one of those because I'm kind of geeky like that, is a guy called Bernard Leiter. He is not a small deal. He is a big deal of an
in
economist
the world of,
dude.
He's an economist rock star.
He's an economist rock star. I would totally give him a lap dance if I met him.
Wow.
He was one of the people who was in Brussels creating the euro.
Ah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
right.
You've heard of that,
that
right?
level. Mm-hmm. The euro. I have heard of the euro.
And so he has this theory that the reason that we have this grip of scarcity in our culture. And the reason that our economics are based around this fear of scarcity is because of the suppression of the great mother archetype in our culture.
Oh, interesting. And sexuality, female sexuality.
But
hello, they're connected.
See, and the more I started studying this, the more I could see the parallels and connections between these two topics.
Right.
And so the great mother archetype was suppressed around the same time as agriculture came into being. And agriculture coming into being was also around the same time that monogamy started coming into being.
You don't say.
So it's all tied together, Monica.
No. I know, it's all part of a big system called civilization. Let's talk about it. Our token straight guy is James. Welcome to Sexploration with Monica.
Thank you.
Yeah. So let's talk about scarcity and what are the ways that scarcity works in sexuality? Like, how is scarcity enforced in our sex drives?
Certainly for women, there's been, you know, a huge suppression in our sexuality. And
slut shaming.
And slut shaming. Thank you, Monica, for that lovely.
I just like saying that word, you know.
And just basically being told, there's this whole, kind of Darwinian theory of female sexuality.
Oh, right.
That, yeah. That women are shy and they're not really that into sex.
The biological
mm-hmm. reproductive urge, because we have so few, so precious are our eggs.
Right.
That we must take extra special care of them and not flaunt them around. Whereas yeah. men, on the other hand, can spray their seed liberally in everyone's faces and not even mind.
Yeah, right.
It doesn't even matter.
Right. I'll just make more.
Some more million seed have gone. And that and that kind of justifies the Victorian idea that women are not sexual beings and that women are not really that into sex and that men have to coax the sex from the women. And yet, at the same time, the Victorian ladies are going to doctors to be relieved of their hysteria.
Right, which hysteria and hysterectomy, hello, something to do with the uterus.
Hmm. Through basically the doctors masturbating them with the old-fashioned and intense vibrating machines.
Right, it's better that than the graham crackers, though.
The hysterical, they call it like a hysterical outbreak or something. Mm-hmm. Like they called it something. They're like, oh no, that's not an orgasm. That's hysteria.
That's your hysteria breaking out.
Ah, I'm going crazy because my husband never has sex with me.
Right, because I'm not supposed to like sex and I have no power. In Victorian society, women had very little power, right?
But luckily the doctors could deal with that situation by manipulating the ladies into
thank God they got that treatment, though, because there's other treatments that people were getting for, you know, too much sex drive, which involved electrocution and
being locked in small boxes.
Yeah, exactly. And in fact, all the BDSM stuff, you know, like the chastity devices and all that, like stuff that were like, ooh, that's so kinky. Ha ha ha. All that was in Victorian creation to try to really suppress sexuality, not just like, you know, every now and then have a release. There was no release.
Right. Yeah. And again, the lock and key on the women's sexuality, you know, the beginning of agriculture also brought about the concept of women as property.
Right.
We have this system where, you know, all of our natural urges are being suppressed and we have to create these systems, which we call religion, which basically tell us what to do. Like, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife. Thou shalt, alongside his cattle.
House or the cattle. And in fact, I don't think the wife was first in the first couple of versions of the Bible. You know, like now it's like, you know, don't covet the wife or the house. And now it's like,
the wife, slaves. I think slaves were in there.
Yeah,
as well,
exactly.
Somewhere.
Exactly. So, yeah, it was very much about kind of a commodity thing. What are some of the ways that now scarcity is enforced? Because I think that we still carry that with us, even now in our feelings about sex and ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And in monogamy, too, mm-hmm. there's a huge reflection of the concept of a scarcity of sex. Mm-hmm. Just because you're having it with one person and your sex drives might be different.
Right. And there's always that one person who's like, well, actually, I'm busy right now, or I'm just not that interested in sex. And then the other person's like, but I don't have anyone to have sex with but you.
That's when you get one of the machines that the doctor gave you.
Hopefully you get those and you're not just told, oh, well, your sex drive is freakishly, you're a nymphomaniac. You know what I mean? There's a lot of ways that...
And absolutely, people are told that. I mean, in our, you know, women even today, even in our modern age, even in San Francisco, in this metropolitan kind of sex positive place, we still, as women, are, if we go out to places, if we go out to bars, if we meet somebody, if you have sex on the first date, there are many, many men who would feel like they respected you less.
I know. Okay. First of all, why would you respect a woman less after having sex with her? And then what do you do about that when you experience that?
Well, just don't have sex with them again.
Yeah, ever.
For a start.
Ever again. That is a perfectly good reason to call that one from the herd.
Yeah.
Like, okay, thanks for letting me know that you're not very sex positive. I won't be having sex with you. We are talking about sexual economics and scarcity, particularly as it relates to monogamy. And we will get to how we can create abundance in our pants. Abundance. Abundance in our pants. Hey.
Nice.
So we've talked about how shaming and calling women sluts and certainly calling women whores is a way of, you know, making it so women feel like they shouldn't be sexual and can't be sexual. Also, do you know how when women are told, oh, you really have to be careful, you can't go out at night, you can't dress like this,
mm-hmm.
you know, all that stuff is kind of messages that women get, that it's not safe for them to be sexual.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's true as well, which is the terrible
horror.
Part, right, is that it is dangerous for a woman to be sexual and out on the streets at night on her own.
Right. However, you are more likely to be raped by someone you know by a power of like 3. So if someone is coming at you with that kind of information, usually they're just trying to control your behavior and shame you.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's not valid. Just because you wore a red dress and got drunk and passed out in the middle of the street, it's certain bad judgment is not a rapeable offense. In addition to the fact that the rape is not the fault of the victim ever. And it's perfectly okay to wear a red dress. Women look good in red dresses.
Yes.
It's and nice.
It's okay to wear short skirts as long as it's not too chilly out.
In 30 below weather as an adolescent, I was like waiting for a bus and like, you know, of course it was the 80s. So it was like jean jacket and, you know, patent leather, yellow high heel shoes in Alaska, 30 below zero. Wow. I thought it was a good idea. Okay. So what is it about our culture that, okay, says, okay, women, you have to look like this. You have to be like this, but you can't be too much like this. Otherwise it's your fault if you get raped.
Well, I think that comes down to also the kind of commodification of sexuality. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's where women are told that they have to be a certain way to a certain extent. But it's like nobody wants their girlfriend. I mean, the thing is, right? We're talking about like normal mainstream culture here.
Right.
Like the kind of people that read the magazines that tell them that they
Cosmo,
have.
Cosmo, et cetera.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Men's health.
And then the men are like, well, I want my girlfriend to be hot, but I don't want her to be hot. Because it's scary.
What is it like a lady on the street and a freak in the bed, but not too freaky because like if you ejaculate, I might lose it or something. No, I know that doesn't rhyme, but I swear to God, that's got to be in there somewhere because you know how men are. They're like, oh yeah, it's really hot if you're like this into sex, but if you're like that into sex, whoa.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. And also whoa, because I can't introduce you to my friends. Because my friends will all want to bone you.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah. And it wouldn't be your choice whether or not you wanted to bone the friends, right? You wouldn't be the one in charge of choosing that. And also, because the friends were so into you, they would be able to, like, stop themselves from boning you out of sense of, you know, brotherhood. What is wrong with this? Yeah, exactly. The way we think about sexuality is, like, there's no choice in it. Like, men feel like they can't choose to...
I think men are very different from women.
Yes and no. You can become a man easily.
And
I mean, well,
if you
biochemically easily.
If you have
not socially
testosterone injections, the reports from the trans men is
who, by the way, earn more than women now.
Who,
yes.
who
they still like they transition, right? And then they start earning more money. Statistical proof.
So the word on the front line from trans men is that when they get or this is what I've heard anyway. Mm. So when they start getting the testosterone injections, they start having uncontrollable sexual fantasies.
Yeah, I heard that testosterone does have that.
So so in a way, I do feel compassion for particularly adolescent men.
Oh, can you imagine?
Oh,
just constantly
raging.
Maybe we should ask the straight guy.
How's adolescence for you?
I think, you know, the same is for any 15-year-old boy. It's just incredibly, incredibly frustrating and weird and mixed messages and stuff like that. Yeah.
And then your body's doing all this stuff. I mean, I remember, like, I used to, like, check on my nipples to see what they were doing because they would do different phases. And, like, I would just want to know, right? And so I'd have to, like, sneak into the bathroom and be like, okay, just checking. Then I'd go on
nipple
with my
check.
Day. Yeah, exactly, because they were changing so much that I was like, whoa, what's going on in there?
Yeah. There was an interesting post on Facebook today, actually, of this guy going around this college campus, and he was asking the question, can men and women just be friends?
Of course they can.
Monica, I have to tell you, you have to watch this video. It's really quite funny. Because he goes around, and all the women go, of course they can. Yeah, sure they can. And the men are all, no way.
Really?
The men are all, it's really hard. No, it's really hard. And the women are all like, no, I totally have a guy friend. And then he starts asking them, well, do you think your guy friend would have sex with you if you let him? And they like look and they're like, yeah, probably. and then all of the women were the ones who were calling the shots. All the guys wanted to get in the chicks' pants, and the chicks were like, you know, we'll just be friends.
Okay.
And this is very mainstream culture. I'm not talking about like San Francisco you know.
Yeah.
I'm talking about an average college campus.
However, there's this belief that men have to be always sexually available for any sexual situation, so much so that, you know, men don't even believe that they can be raped. They're like, how could I possibly be raped? I want to have sex with anyone all the time. You know what I mean? Right? And so, like, they certainly couldn't say no to a sexual opportunity, in addition to the fact that, you know, it's a woman. Of course I want to have sex with her. If I'm willing to talk to her, I'm willing to have sex with her. But there's this belief that they have to be. Of course, I'm not saying that that's true for every man, that they really do authentically want to have sex with every woman they come across the path of. No, no, no. I mean, I think that, in fact, you should be authentically what you are, true, also, and not be pressured into having sex all the time if you don't want to be.
And I think that there are a million and one reasons why men and women are different biologically and socially as well, you know?
See, for me, it's so hard to separate out the social differences. Like, we've been acculturated to be so different.
I don't think you have to separate them out. No. I don't think it's important. I think at this point,
we are
incredibly complex primates with these incredibly, with both, you know, these different kind of hormonal and
cultural
reproductive imperatives. And then the cultural thing, the social thing. I mean, there's so many factors to it. Mm-hmm. But I think it boils down to the fact that that men and women are very different. And I love living in San Francisco because it brings this awesome extra quality into it where it's you know, the genders aren't binary, and there are trans people, there are intersex people, it's shades of gray, which I love because it's a reflection of the complexity of our culture in general, you know, this idea that there is good and evil, this idea that there's black and white, like this duality,
right,
of
the
our,
binary
of our culture.
System.
And I love the fact in San Francisco that everything gets a little more, you know,
fluid. So we're talking about sexual economics and scarcity. Let's talk about masculinity and feminism, right? Because women have feminism to, you know, kind of give themselves a little bit of a distinction between the way culture says that we're supposed to be and the way that we actually are, so we can be more fully authentic and powerful. But I don't know, James, as a man, do you feel like that you really have a chance to be your authentic self, you know, rather than just being, you know, whatever the idealized man is?
It's...
Or is there still a lot of pressure to be a man, to be really tough, to be really masculine?
There's certainly pressure in that mm-hmm. regard. And there's definitely an emphasis that you should be a certain way, mm-hmm. or you should act a certain way. Mm-hmm. In San Francisco, in terms of the places you can live in, you know, the U.S. and abroad, mm-hmm. is probably one of the more open-minded cities when it comes to masculinity, notions of gender, stuff right. like that. But yeah, there's definitely still... Like this idea, like I lived in New York for a while, and there's this idea that you're supposed to be really overtly masculine about stuff, and to the point of, you know, what people here would consider really pushy about it.
Out right, here, really aggressive.
Right. Out mm-hmm. here, anytime I get pushy, people are like, well, that's just a really masculine trait. And I'm like, no, I'm being pushy because I'm frustrated. not because I've got
No,
like,
I'm pissed off.
right, not just because I've got a Y chromosome. But
right, right. You know, we were talking a little bit about sexuality as a commodity, like we have to be a certain way to be sexy. Let's talk a little bit more about that, because I think sometimes industry and marketers kind of take away the idea of sexiness, kind of divorce it from our experience of being a human being. You know, like you aren't sexy until you spray this on your face.
Yeah, you know, there was another Facebook post I'm going to refer to that I had today in my inbox, which was someone saying that... it was a link to vintage posters of women who were voluptuous. And it said, nobody wants to be skinny.
Aww.
Come on, here, bulk up your weight. Nobody wants to be the unpopular skinny girl.
Ugh.
And it was like this whole series of posters from the 50s right. of like basically where if you were naturally too thin, you could bulk yourself up and get yourself some ass. And
by drinking this special product or something,
right,
I
right.
imagine.
A bulking mm-hmm. whatever. And, right. and some people had posted.
Or you could just wear a pillow on your butt.
Yeah, you could do that. They sell those in the Mission, you know.
Yeah.
and there were some posts under it from women being like, oh, I was born in the wrong era. Oh,
right.
But hot. And I was like, I don't think it matters whether I'm being told that I need to be one way
or
being
the other
told
way.
To be another way. It all.
Can I just be the way I am?
It all
please?
Is basically
making you feel bad and then selling you something.
Yeah, making you feel bad and selling you something, which is what this is what our culture is built on.
Right.
Western culture is built on making you feel bad and selling you something.
Right. Taking away your ability to enjoy yourself, pleasure, sexuality, authentic, whatever it is. And saying, in fact, you need to entertain yourself in these very narrow ways.
Yes.
And by the way, get married, have kids and have a job. And wear your hair like this. And
get this car. And
right, because cars are important.
You're inadequate by this. It'll
right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And so it's all about really just filling the gaping
And it's also good
void.
For the environment.
Yeah. Fill the gaping void in your life with stuff and you will
right.
be happy. A quote from...
And get into debt while you're doing it.
Yeah, a quote from a friend of mine, Charles Eisenstein, is joint consumption never creates intimacy. Only joint creativity and the giving of gifts creates intimacy. And that's been my quote of the last couple of weeks.
Right.
It's been coming up for me a lot.
Because if you're just, you know, watching a movie together, you're not right. really relating with each other.
Yeah, you're just eating food together.
Right. I mean, and unless you're having a really amazing conversation, which if you're not really talking about what really means anything to you, then
right.
of course you're not going to create intimacy. It's not just... You know, like now they have all these online things like events and adventures where you can like they'll plan what you do so you don't have to think about it. So you can maybe have a possibility of relating with another human being because you wouldn't be able to talk to them at the grocery store.
Right.
Because you don't talk to strangers.
I think the dating scene, the single scene is like a microcosm of the macrocosm of the problem with our culture.
OkCupid.com.
I really do. I think it's just the fact that there's so many people who feel exactly the same way, which mm-hmm. is isolated, unable to connect with other people, unfulfilled, unsatisfied. You know, there's just like, and they all feel the same way. And
right.
they're all
Everyone
looking
is
for
lonely.
The same thing.
Everyone's afraid.
Right.
So how do we move from that? I mean, that's the scarcity. That's the enforced scarcity of loneliness and monogamy and fear that we put upon ourselves or maybe that our culture trains us to be so that we, I don't know, buy more stuff, stay in more stable relationships. There's a logical succession of property from father to son to father mm-hmm. to son.
Yeah, exactly.
How do we get out of that and start being our authentic, beautiful, juicy, actual selves? Vibrant, sparkly.
Well, I think the only way forward is through art and creativity. Creativity creates intimacy, and creating things together is what binds us together. And so I think doing whatever it is for you, like whatever form of creativity for you might be inspiring. I think, you know, people are very different. And so just really looking inward first and being like, okay, what inspires me? What elevates me? If you are doing what elevates you, then you will naturally attract people to you who elevate you.
Right.
And so everybody is being brought together through that process. And whatever it is that you end up doing, whether it's, you know, creating a community garden or political activism or whatever it is, there's working on Burning Man projects together, creating art, doing murals, you know, like just doing something, just getting out in the world and doing something creative with other human beings, you will naturally, it will naturally create intimacy. Whether or not those people you end up having sex with, I guess depends on how slutty you are.
Is there anything wrong with being slutty?
Nothing in my book.
Well, there's this idea that, you know, being a slut is maybe the worst thing that you could be, right?
Oh, but I like to reclaim that word. I like to reclaim the word pervert as well. I think pervert has been really, really, you know, it's got a bad rap. Perverts have a bad rap. And there's lots of really healthy, fun, life-loving perverts out there who I think should be proud of the fact that they're perverts and hold their heads high.
Well, okay, so there's this idea of being generous with your genitals. Like there's this other culture that the worst thing that you can say about someone is that they're stingy with their genitals.
Right.
Right. So sluts are able to share pleasure with a wide variety of people. They're not stingy. They're like, hey, I could give you pleasure. I could receive pleasure from you. That doesn't seem like a bad thing, right? I think that there's this idea that we're like, okay, well, sex must take something away from particularly women, that it must make them dirty or degraded in some way. And I think that that's one of the ways that we invalidate female sexuality, you know, that we, you know, that we actually start to create a situation in which women don't want to be sexual. And then they start to, you know, be like, OK, so I won't have sex with you if you think I'm a slut.
Right. Because then they become used property, to go back to the original analogy about property and ownership.
Right. Yeah. And then, of course, yeah, the whole property deal as well. So how do we get into our sense of abundance with sexuality? How do we let go of the negative beliefs? I mean, because I mean, people still believe them. I mean, how do we exist and stand against all of these beliefs?
Well, and it's interesting because, you know, even though like I actually firmly believe that we're naturally promiscuous as primates, as creatures, and that our prehistory was incredibly slutty, and that actually this kind of enforced monogamy has only really been a structure that's existed in our culture for, you know, a few thousand years out of hundreds of thousands of years of being promiscuous.
Right. As the event of agriculture and civilization.
Exactly. And so we are, nonetheless, we do have these 10,000 years or so of issues to get over, which is no small task.
Right.
I mean, we're kind of waking up within this reality to look at ourselves and say, okay, wow, we are having consciousness around, you know, our prehistory and where we came from and where we're going to and what's natural and what feels right.
Mm-hmm.
It takes some brave souls to be the first on the dance floor.
Mm-hmm.
To stand up for what they believe in and to stand up for an end to this shame that we have in our culture around our sexuality.
Right.
And I think that there's San Francisco is the pioneering town. This is the place where
it's pretty sex positive. Annie Sprinkle calls it the clitoris of the United States. Very small, very electric.
That's fantastic.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, yeah.
So you and your partner, Scott, have been running Kinky Salon, a sex positive community for lots of different events, but particularly this very bacchanalian, multigendered, sexy cabaret arty party, right? And they have all the elements. In fact, one of the things that, I don't know, maybe do you warn people? Maybe not. But if you were to warn people, you might warn them that there's a lot of talking there, that it's not all sex. You know, that, yeah, their sex is an option if you want to go back in the jungle room.
Yeah, people who came. I love that you still call it the jungle room.
I know, it's not called the jungle room anymore.
It hasn't been the jungle room for like 5 years.
Really? But anyway, when I went back there the first time, it was like all the, you know, you had the plants and stuff and all the like leopard print stuff. And it was all these legs and hosieries and moving parts. And I was just like, the jungle room.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what is it now? Like the harem room? And it was something else for a while.
I think it's called the bordello or something.
Well, anyway, it's a big room in the back with nothing but mattresses and decor, which makes you feel...
We call it horizontal socializing space.
Excellent.
Because, and it is, I mean, it's got a huge mural of the Eiffel Tower or something. Is it Paris something?
Moulin Rouge.
Right, exactly. So some Paris going on there and lots of plants and a water cooler. It's very comfy.
A water cooler and big, big baskets.
So you don't get
condoms.
Dehydrated. Yeah, exactly. And lube and hand towels and female condoms.
Yeah, we take care of our guests.
That's right.
But yeah, like you said, you know, I think people would be disappointed if they came there just looking for a sex party. People who go to sex parties, like swingers, I guess they would be called. People who are going to a party to get laid, exchange partners, whatever. They would be like, why are all these people talking so much? And like, seriously, like, what is going on? Like, and a lot of people come to Kinky Salon and never even have sex. They come every month. They're coming just for the social scene and for the atmosphere of liberalized sexuality, because it just feels really good to be in a space where everyone just feels liberal about sexuality. It just feels good. It feels good. Everyone's so...
Oh, yeah. No, it's nice to be around the environment.
I always say that sex is the best backdrop to a party.
Oh, it's totally true.
Yeah.
And to know that it's a possibility, you know? Like, you could go and... I used to go and make out in what is now called the...
I don't know. What room?
Room. I don't know what it's called anymore. The jungle room. It's the jungle room. Okay, fine. But yeah, like to go out and like make a new friend and talk to them for a while and then be like, let's go make out in the jungle room. And so you can be in all that energy and all of that like delicious openness. But, you know, you can play as shallowly as you feel safe doing.
And I think that's one of the nicest things about the sex positive community, too, is that the idea that sexuality is just an integrated part of our reality and that it's not like something, either something shameful or something that you would like have like really intense like feelings towards, but just it's just something that exists. It's just something that happens in our lives, and you can go as far or as near as you like, and there's no pressure. So at Kinky Salon, if you want to just go and make out for a bit and then you want to say, oh, that was so great, I really enjoyed that, let's go back in the other room now, that's fine, that's good, you know. And then if you want to take it further, then you can. But I think it's all about negotiation and consent and like figuring out what your boundaries are. And, you know, everyone's, it's an interesting place because sexuality is, it's kind of like a place where a lot of people store a lot of their issues.
Sexuality? You
know? Sexuality is like a, it's like a Pandora's box.
Yeah, it's a big dark box in our brain. Yeah.
So Freud had some of it, right?
Yeah.
Well, especially back then, because no one was talking about sex, no one was having sex, and you couldn't talk about sex.
Right, he was
Freud
the first one to say
penis. Talking about sex, but not having sex.
Right, which makes it even more fraught with dark subconscious urges.
It is true, though. There is absolutely no doubt that our sexuality is a scary place. This is why it's been demonized. Because through your sexuality, you can really transform. You can transform, you can grow, you can learn in an accelerated way, in a way that you can't just from talking, that you can't just from thinking about things in your head. To take it down through your whole body, to experience things on a full from top to bottom kind of way, it is a different kind of transformation. And that's really always been the goal of Kinky Salon. Even though Kinky Salon is fun and there's costumes and it's freaky and wee, you know, you can have all of that stuff.
I'm dressing up as a muffin.
Exactly, there's muffins. But the biggest goal is transformation, is that people come and they have an experience that leaves them changed.
Right. They create a new identity in that space, too.
Yeah.
Like suddenly they're a muffin or a space cadet. Or speaking of space cadets, you have a new party coming up for New Year's Eve.
Good segue.
Well, I just thought of it because last year for New Year's Eve, you really did have like the, like, wasn't it an outer space kind of Barbarella theme?
Last year was a Barbarella theme. Yes.
And this year is this like year, the future.
This year. Yes. Utopia is the theme of this year.
What's it going to be like?
Well, it's going to be just about the most awesome future that you could possibly imagine. We're bringing together all the sex positive communities that gather at Mission Control, which include Kinky Salon, Club Kiss, Pink, Touch, Velvet. There's a whole ton of events that happen at Mission Control in this space. Mm-hmm. And basically what we're doing is we're trying to create a showcase so that we can bring them all together and so that you can kind of see this smorgasbord of opportunities. We're going to have kind of like a world's fair, you know, like a world's fair of the sex positive future of humanity.
And you dress up?
Yeah. You can, but it's not a mandatory dress code for this one.
Oh, really?
I think you definitely have to. You can't wear jeans. You can never wear jeans.
Well, you want to at least be sexifying yourself in some way. But it's your chance to be your authentic self. Is your authentic self really wearing jeans? Come on.
It's not like the Kinky Salon dress code where, you know, you really have to make an effort or you won't get in the door. It's going to be a little bit more relaxed, just because we know that people party hop on New Year's Eve.
Right.
And so if we're forcing people to dress as muffins, they don't have many other places to go.
I don't know. This is San Francisco. You could probably manage.
Being dressed as muffins a good conversation starter.
Right. Well, and the costumes at Kinky Salon are just such a part of the experience. I mean, people really do have, you know, boxes of candy strapped to their foreheads and dressed fully head to toe as a tiger or a stripper zombie or whatever.
There's a couple of reasons why we do that. One of them is that if everybody has to make an effort and think about what they're going to wear, then everyone who walks in that door is invested. There's nobody who's coming through the door who doesn't know what's going on or who is just clueless. Everybody who comes in the door knows what's happening, and so we don't get people in off the street. Mm-hmm. It's a really good way of like sorting people from people just wandering in off the street.
Right.
And that's been like, that was how it started really in the first place. Was like, okay, yeah.
How do we make sure that it's not just some random person off mission being like, oh, is this a party?
That is, you know, when I first started throwing costume parties, that was one of the reasons. And also just that it's really fun to dress in a costume.
It is fun and you're participating and you can create a different self.
That investment is creative. Mm-hmm. And as Charles Eisenstein says, you know, creativity creates intimacy. So that idea of being creative together and coming together, we're all on the same page, you know, and there's this level of excitement. There's this level of like, of excitement in knowing that everybody who's there has made this effort. And you can look around at the other people there and there's always something to talk about because you've all made an investment. Even if it's like, why do you have that box of candy strapped to your forehead? I don't get the concept. Some people have these like really intricate conceptual outfits.
Right.
Where
woman who dressed up as Schrodinger's cat.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Oh, she was so sparkly too. It was really nice. Then you can like geek out about physics while there's like sex going on everywhere. It's so awesome. Yeah, the community really brings the costumes to the table and they go all out. It's so beautiful.
Kinky Salon really started out being a fetish club. So when it very first started, it was it had a classic fetish dress code. It was leather, you know, latex, all of that kind of stuff. And then in the 90s, a lot of those parties were really strict about you have to wear leather, you have to wear latex, no normal fabrics allowed, like no cotton, no like spandex.
Whoa.
You know, it had to be leather and latex. And they wouldn't let you in if you were wearing, like, for example, a schoolgirl outfit. No, that's not.
You couldn't
that doesn't
be a
work.
Schoolgirl.
I know people that were kicked out of fetish clubs for
being a schoolgirl.
Don't
kick out the schoolgirls. That seems very counterintuitive.
And so as Kinky Salon developed, and really, I'm not really super into leather and latex. That's not my thing. That's not my kink. So I like dressing up in costumes. And so I was like, the dress code just kind of morphed from a classic fetish dress code to like just really be creative and wear something preferably ridiculous. Humor
yes.
is really good. Humor is another great icebreaker, right?
Exactly.
It's really good. It's something about Kinky Salon where everyone just looks so ridiculous. Sometimes when I'm doing the cabaret and I'm standing there on the stage and I'm looking at all these ridiculous people.
Right. It's
I just
so
have to
beautiful,
stop and
right?
be like, oh my God, people, what are you wearing?
Yeah. But in a really positive way, doesn't it make your heart like...
It makes my heart explode with joy in a way that I can't really explain.
Kind of like a, what is happening here? Whoa. Let's talk about the importance of making out.
Let's talk about the importance of making out.
Mm-hmm. I know
what,
it's
me
not
me and you right here, right now.
For those of you at home, it's unfortunately not that interesting to listen to people making out, actually. Sadly, it's true. I've tried that in radio, you know, shows past, especially with, you know, Reed Mihalko. He's like, let's just make out on the show. And I'm like, yeah,
oh, Reed.
But it sounds like this. Mm. So, you know, that's okay. Mm-hmm. But, we can talk about, pheromones. Mm-hmm. It's the safest sex.
Yeah.
Also, there's a lot of important things about
there's
making out.
There's a lot of important things about making out.
And you
Monica,
can
you're right.
make out with people you don't know very well. And it's not like it's a big commitment.
In fact, you know, something I've noticed is that sometimes I'm not sexually attracted to somebody until I make out with them. It's like making out with them is the switch that flicks that makes me go, oh, yeah. Like before that, I was like, whatever, you know, they seem nice. And then I make out with them and I'm like, wow, it's so sexy now, you know? So I think that there's a lot in making out. I think making out is a really positive, fun thing to do. Mm-hmm. And
it's a way to exchange sexual energy without getting out your enchilada.
Yeah. It doesn't have to always be about the enchilada.
Right. It can just be about playing with your face. And also, I did some research on this. When you're making out with someone, you are testing each other's immune systems to see if they are different enough for you to have successful offspring.
And also that when you're on the pill,
when
you're on the pill, apparently those natural senses are deadened. Mm-hmm. And so you can be making out with somebody when you're on the pill and you think they're really great and then maybe you get married and then you come off the pill to have a baby and all of a sudden you're like, so not attracted to this person anymore.
Oh my God.
Whoops.
And then you're having babies that have the immune systems that are too similar to be fully successful. It's not a really good thing that we're doing to our offspring, really. So we're talking about hanging out at open sex environments and really creating abundance in our sex lives. And I think that that's sometimes really scary for people, especially if they're in a couple, because they feel like having other people involved in their sex life might be really destabilizing, like they might lose their partner.
Well, there's the concept that love is scarce, that love is finite. And that's something that's been, you know,
drilled into us
by every single song on the radio, by every single movie. Oh, baby, I can't live without you. You're the only one, blah, blah, blah.
You're the one. The whole idea of the one, like there's only one. And if that person accidentally dies in a fire or something, then you're like,
well,
what happens then?
Exactly.
Celibate for the rest of
you
your life.
You only get one muffin and that's it.
It's a problem.
Yeah. But, okay, so you're in a relationship, and I'm sure, James, you've probably been in a relationship with women that probably have been really threatened by you, even the possibility of you being attracted to another woman, let alone actually having sex and making out with them.
Right. It's like you hear the phrase that men are visual, and people will be like, that's BS. And it's like, no, even best of my intentions, when I'm walking down the street with somebody I'm dating, I tend to track whatever's going by me, and if whatever's going by me is attractive and female, I'm just like, huh, and then, you know, I come back to my senses when I get slapped.
Well, I get distracted by beauty as well, but luckily I'm in a relationship where we can both acknowledge that together and decide whether or not we want to
chase it down.
Is it possible to chase it down? Is that socially appropriate right now? Are we in the situation where we can be like, hi, what are you doing? So how do we get from a place of, you know, I can't believe that you would possibly be attracted to another person, I'm going to hit you in the face right now as a socially appropriate response, to what else could happen? Can we all make friends? Because it is kind of a big jump.
Yeah, you know, I think different people are different as well. I think that there are some lifestyles that are really suitable for some kind of people and other lifestyles that are suitable for other kind of people. I think that there's a million different reasons why you might have the particular makeup that you have, your personality, your hormone levels, your brain chemistry. Like there's all these different things.
And there's nothing wrong with being monogamous.
And there's nothing wrong with being monogamous. But being monogamous, if you find somebody else who's monogamous and you guys just want to hang out with each other forever and ever,
woo,
that is awesome. I'm totally encouraging of that. the issue that I have is that in our culture, we're not given the options.
Right.
We're given one option, and that's to be with one person for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And
either no love or monogamy.
Right.
And I think a lot of people just don't, I mean, they want intimacy also. And then, of course, the only other option is cheating.
Right.
You know, and then you have all these other things that go along with it, like you're in a domestic relationship, things start to be more centered around the domestic relationship than the sexual relationship. You start to become accustomed to another person, which, you know, variety is really the spice of sexuality. And that's the same person that you've been in the same relationship for 7 years or whatever. So
the 7 year
unless itch. One of you is dressing up as a cop and then a maid and then a, I don't know, a horsey or something, whatever it is. It kind of gets old, you know, so how do you spice that up?
For some people.
Yeah.
For some people it does. There's also some people who have just naturally low sex drives and just very naturally not wanting to have sex very often. And
it may be natural, but it may be us suppressing our sex drive as well.
And absolutely, there's both. All I'm saying is there's a whole gamut of options. Mm-hmm. At one end of the scale, there's really extreme monogamy where all your emotional needs are met by one person, where you don't even have platonic friendships outside of your main mm-hmm. relationship. And then at the other end, there's extreme polyamory where you don't even have...
Polysluttery.
where you don't even have a primary partner, where you have right. multiple partners who are mm-hmm. all equally important to you, and you go from one to the other without feeling like one needs to take priority. And I think that between those two things, there are as many options as there are people. And I think just education and getting it out there and letting people know what options are available to them, and that there are options available to them, and that it's not, and people see polyamory as like, well, it's polyamory versus monogamy.
And, but that's another binary.
But it's exactly, that's another binary. And ultimately polyamory, there are as many different forms of polyamory as there are as many different forms of monogamy, which there are. Like if you think about, okay, there's this fuzzy line in the middle between polyamory and monogamy, which is somewhere around, well, I can have friends with other people. I can maybe make out with those other people. I can maybe spend an hour with those other people, but I'm right. not allowed to spend more than an hour or whatever.
Well, you can have whatever rule works for you.
Whatever rules right. work for you. And there's this fuzzy area in the middle that's not quite monogamy and it's not quite polyamory. And I think that's where most people would want to live, somewhere right. in between the two.
So when you're doing a kinky salon party and you're having the conversation with the couple on the couch that's a little overwhelmed and didn't talk about their boundaries before they came to the party, what are some of the things that you say to get them kind of on the track of connecting with each other again and smoothing it over?
Well, I mean, you know, I talk about...
Because I imagine there's a lot of like... And
funnily enough, Monica, to tell you the truth, funnily enough,
really,
it's usually the dudes
that are crying on the couch.
Yeah,
no surprise.
It's usually what happens is the guys.
Weird.
It's their idea.
Oh,
the guy
right.
is like the guy.
Hey.
The guy is like, hey, come to this party with me. It's going to be cool. It's going to be awesome. They come to the party. Women are much more popular at the parties because there's
everyone's
so much
attracted to women.
There's so much
right?
more bisexuality in women right. than there is in men, and so their partner ends up getting taken off into the back room, and they're left.
She goes into the jungle room,
going,
and he's on the sofa.
And he's going sitting there, going, well, I can't be mad because this was my idea.
Right.
And we, you know, you have to be like, well, you really need to talk this through and really make it clear about what your limitations are, to be able to take each other aside, even at the event, to have a hand signal, a wink and a nod, whatever
right.
it is
hand
to say.
Signal.
To say so th- well so that you're not putting this other person off as well. So
right.
if for example, if you're with someone and you meet another couple and you think, oh, this is going really well, and you're starting to go, and then one of you starts to feel weird and like, oh God, I'm disappearing, I'm spiraling, I'm jealous,
right,
but rather than saying, I need to talk to you right now, come this way, right,
right.
which can be awkward,
huge.
Instead, just a little wink, just a little hey. But having permission to do that,
right,
and to pull your partner out of a situation so that you can say, oh, I feel really weird,
right,
it's not that I want it to stop, I just wanted to tell you I feel really weird.
They need a hug.
Yeah, exactly.
I love you and you're totally it's not your fault, but I'm freaking out.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Well, I want to make sure that people are able to find you. They can find your blog at polysuperstar.com. And you talk a lot about this stuff. You have a blog about this... the scarcity of love, mm-hmm. and then the erotic economy. And we've talked a little bit about the erotic economy, but there's this idea that hotness, you mm-hmm. know, is something that you need to have, or and then it only looks like certain things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And then, we only have 50 seconds left in the show.
Don't stop me on that one, Monica.
I know. But anyway, it's really interesting, and you should think about going to polysuperstar.com and checking it out. Thank you to our token straight guy, James.
Thanks,
pleasure to have you on the show. Poly Superstar, it's great to have you.
Yay, thanks, Monica. It was fun.
You can download free podcasts at sexplorationwithmonica.com.